Every time I look online or I hear someone talking about stage fright or performance anxiety, if you will, or fear of public speaking, I hear over and over and over again that you can't do anything about it. That the best you can do is to take your fear and somehow turn it into excitement, right? How to do that, I don't hear about. What I do hear is that people say that's the best you can do. I know for a fact that that is not true.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 88, with the author and creator of The Stage Fright Cure, Marty McEwen.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey, girls and guys, welcome to another edition of the Angles of Latitude podcast. Glad that you join us today. I'm your host, JC Preston, and in this session, I'm with another new co-host, Veronica Kieran. Veronica has been doing work as a women's entrepreneurs coach since her session 51, and she was also the host of a podcast herself called The Degrees of Separation. Good thing for her, her women entrepreneurship coaching work has picked up quite a bit, but unfortunately for her podcast, it didn't leave her really that much time to continue developing that. So after I realized that she was no longer producing that show, I said, hey, what would you think about joining our show? And she was like, sure. So glad to have her on the team at New Inceptions. And if you're new to the podcast, you might be wondering, well, what is New Inceptions? Well, it's a website dedicated in helping people create their own personal freedom. And in this podcast, which is released each Thursday, we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. So thank you for joining us. But before we get into today's conversation with our awesome guest, I want to tell you a little bit about Fizzle.co. And, you know, it's amazing when you can decide how to spend your own time, to design your own way and live life independently. It's difficult to do, though. And like anything in life, there's no guarantees, and you'll definitely need to work for it. But it is possible to do it. People are finding success all over the world and web. And I mean, really, if you're new to the entrepreneurship world on the web, sure, you might not be able to find people. But once you get into it, there's success stories all over the place. And the thing is that you can be one of those success stories. Along the journey, you're going to find that it's totally worth it. And you're also going to find out what you're made of. And in fact, that's why we have this show, to give you guys encouragement, tips, and tactics to build your own independent business. However, if you want to go deeper and be a part of a membership community that won't let you quit, then I think it's time for you to check out Fizzle. Maybe you want to go faster, have more guidance, or have access to training courses. They have that all as part of their membership community. And if you need to know something, guidance for the next step, or insanely valuable feedback, or even coaching calls, it's all available there. It only costs $35 a month. Try it out today for 5 weeks free by visiting newinceptions.com/fizzle. Again, that's newinceptions.com/F-I-Z-Z-L-E. So on to today's guest, who is a really, really great guest. And I got, like, seriously, she was introduced to me by one of our more recent guests, Barbara Ireland of Session 79. And Barbara said, JC, you really need to have this awesome lady on your show. She's really helped me with bettering my message, and I think that she could do a lot for your audience. So that was kind of a no-brainer decision. And at that point, I still didn't even know exactly what she did yet, because one of the first conversations I had with Marty, I was thinking she was still a voice coach, like Roger Love. But Marty is actually the original Stage Fright coach. And when I say original, I mean it. Her website is stagefright.com. And if you can't get any more to the point than stagefright.com, you know, as opposed to all these longer URLs that you see out there these days, yeah. So Marty's been actually working in this field since 1980. And in her book, The Stage Fright Cure, she not only talks about how we can deal with our stage fright, but also how to get rid of it by figuring out where the source of it is from. This is something that I think a lot of us have to deal with as we're going on a creative path, because as we get more and more well-known, well, there's more of chances for us to actually speak in front of people. So, you know, totally glad to have her on today's show. In this conversation, Veronica and I learn how her background in therapy gives her a unique perspective in this issue, what inspired her to write her book, and some of the things that people can look at themselves if they want to get over stage fright. I really think you guys are going to get a lot from this one, and you can follow along at home with the show notes at newinceptions.com/88. I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. JC here, and joining me today is my new co-host, Veronica Kieran.
Hi.
And if you've been around the show a bit, you might remember Veronica from back in session 51, where she talked about many different things that she's been up to, including moving on to be an entrepreneurial coach for women. How are you doing today, Veronica?
I'm great. It's spring. It's so beautiful out. It's so much fun to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, total pleasure. And, you know, I know that you had started to do a podcast of your own at one point that was very similar to what we do here at AOL. So it was kind of a no-brainer to bring in, and you know, that way you can still have your voice out there on the airwaves a little bit. So,
oh yes, the people need my voice.
That's right. But yeah, today we'll be talking with a guest who's also a coach, but her focus has been helping people with their stage fright for over her 20-year career. And since grad school, she has been a licensed therapist who treats anxiety, phobias, and traumatic event survivors through the use of advanced body, mind, and energy techniques. And, you know, this has given her an in-depth insight as to the inner dynamics of fear and safety. And through this, combined with her love of singing and the performing arts, she has an inside awareness of what stage fright really is, why people have it, and what to do about it. And this has enabled her to develop a successful specialty in helping people overcome any kind of stage fright, performance anxiety, or fear of public speaking. And today's guest is Marty McEwen. And thanks for being on the show, Marty.
I am delighted. Thanks for having me so much.
Oh, pleasure. Really appreciate you coming on today. And you know, really looking into your background a bit. You know, it's a topic that I can relate to, because as I'm sure most of our listeners, you know, public speaking or just getting out in front of people for many is scarier than dying. And, you know, and it's just like one of those things that, you know, when I was definitely going through high school, like I really wanted to be involved with some of the things that, like, I could debate people like in class, yeah. But as far as a debate team, I couldn't feel myself getting to that next level. And
oh, wow.
Up until when I was teaching at the college level, you know, I personally would freeze up when I was in the comm classes, and I would, you know, be that deer in the headlight. And then when I was in grad school, you know, that completely changed, and I was able to be in front of classes of up to 30 people. But it was simply due to me having to, you know, pay through grad school. So tell me a bit about your background before you were able to help other people tackle it.
Absolutely. You know, I was in Toastmasters years and years ago, and I had some fear of public speaking. But for me, the way it came across was after I gave a presentation, my adrenaline level would go like nuts.
Mm-hmm.
I would be sweating and worried, and what was going through my mind was I okay? Was I okay? It was almost like I had the stage fright after the event in speaking. But later in my life, when I started to learn to sing, the story goes, and it's true, my first voice lesson, I discovered what it felt like to have a panic attack. I mean, I'm not kidding. My voice teacher said, sing me a song. And I went, I can't. I mean, my throat closed up and my eyes got big and my hands were sweaty and shaking. And I know a lot of your listeners have had that kind of experience. What was so surprising to me was that everyone has a different kind of stage fright, if you will. Not only are the symptoms different, but each person's stage fright gets triggered by different kinds of situations. For me, it's public speaking. I sort of had a normal adrenaline response, but with singing, I could not make a sound. And it was at that point, actually, that I decided that if I couldn't get over my stage fright about singing, I was not going to sing. I wanted to sing really badly. I always wanted to be a singer. But I'm going to tell you, if it had to feel like that, I was going to jettison it because it was way too uncomfortable.
Now, when you were learning becoming a singer, was that still back in college? Because your major was actually in theater, so you had some sort of mastery of it to pursue that field, right? I mean, why else would you have gone into theater if you had like this huge fright of being on stage?
Actually, I didn't have a fright of being on stage entirely. But I will tell you this, my major in theater was mostly directing and stage managing.
Okay.
Because I didn't have the sense of security within myself to get up and act without that loop of, oh my God, what am I doing? How am I doing? What do they think? And if you're acting, you can't let that get in your way. You've got just to be able to be that character completely. I didn't have the sense of security at the time to be able to do that. So I avoided it like a lot of people do when they have stage fright. They just avoid the thing they might really like to do because those feelings get in the way.
Wow.
But singing, in answer to your question, singing didn't come up for me until, gosh, maybe 10 or 15 years ago that I actually took my first voice lesson. And by that time, I had been using energy psychology techniques in my office with people with panic attacks, anxiety, phobias in particular, for quite a long time. And it wasn't until I took that first voice lesson that I found that I had a phobia of my own.
Oh, okay.
So I took those techniques that I had been using so successfully with other people and sat myself down and started to work on my own inner perceptions about performing in general, but about singing in particular. And that's how I developed my theory and the techniques that I use to help people getting over their stage fright.
So how did you get into therapy when your background was theater?
Well, that's personal, but I'm willing to get personal. I was married in my mid-20s for 3 years. And at the end of that marriage, my then husband had an affair with my best friend. It was so shocking to me that that happened. I mean, literally shocking. That I guess you'd call it a nervous breakdown. There really isn't such a thing as a nervous breakdown. But I couldn't work. I couldn't. It just completely threw me for a loop. At the time, I was a speech and drama teacher at a private school here in Seattle, doing very well at it. And when that happened, it was such a traumatic shock to my system that I couldn't continue, and I had to leave that job. So I took some time off to recover from that blow in my life. And somebody said to me, hey, Marty, you know, you'd be a pretty good therapist. So at that point, I'm okay, So I started graduate school and the rest is history, as they say. And I've loved it. I've absolutely loved it because, well, for a lot of reasons, but one reason, because I am endlessly fascinated by how people become who they are and why their lives take a certain tack versus some other tack. And how to help people to recover from those blows that happen to all of us to a certain degree in our lives and get back on our own natural paths. And I think that's why one reason why I'm so passionate about helping people with stage fright and performance anxiety of any kind. Because if we have it, we can be so limited in achieving the things that are our heart's desire. Mm-hmm. Just like you were saying, you would like to be able to speak comfortably in front of people. Well, you can, right. But there's something within you, and there was something within me that was preventing me from feeling comfortable doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it all started tying together, if you will.
So yeah, so you've been through this journey, which is absolutely incredible, and I thank you so much for sharing. I think that the story behind a lot of people's work is where the fruits lie, and being willing to share it with others not only humanizes you, but also really galvanizes the work that you're doing. So thank you so much for sharing that with us and our listeners. As you started your work into therapy and then working with people with their stage fright, what was it that propelled you forward into turning this into a book called The Stage Fright Cure?
Every time I look online or I hear someone talking about stage fright or performance anxiety, if you will, or fear of public speaking, I hear over and over and over again that you can't do anything about it. That the best you can do is to take your fear and somehow turn it into excitement, right?
Mm-hmm.
How to do that, I don't hear about. What I do hear is that people say that's the best you can do. I know for a fact that that is not true. So let me just fill you in a little bit. When I started to work with myself around the fear of singing and decided to use the energy psychology techniques I was already using with my clients on myself, which you can do, I kind of went inside and I asked myself, okay, if I am so afraid to sing in front of people, then the situation must be threatening to me because I'm having this fight, flight, or freeze response to the situation involuntarily. So there must be something that I'm perceiving about this situation that feels threatening to some part of me on the inside. If all those people can comfortably get up in front of people and sing, then there's nothing inherently dangerous in it. It has to be inside of me. I asked myself, where does this come from in me? Why is it that I perceive these situations as though they're so dangerous? One after another, incidents in my life started to come to the surface, if you will, in my memory.
Uh-huh.
That had elements in them that would make it emotionally aversive to get up in front of people and make a fool of myself. So the first one that came up was this incident in fourth grade. In fourth grade, I had this mad crush on this guy, Steve. And I begged my mother to take me out and get me a brand new dress to wear to school on the first day of school to impress Steve.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it turned out that Steve and I sat in the classroom in the front two seats of the middle rows, if you can imagine that, in a elementary school classroom. And there was a rule in the school that if you weren't at your desk by the time the bell stopped ringing, you were tardy and you were going to be taken to that terrible vice principal's office. Nobody wanted that. So I showed up that morning in this, I got to tell you, it was some kind of dress. It was way overdressed for fourth grade, but I wanted to impress Steve. So I was wearing this sherbet colored dress with white stockings and brand new white Mary Janes. I was standing outside the classroom and the bell started to ring. I ran up the middle aisle to get to my seat as fast as I could, only to find out that they'd waxed the floors.
Oh!
I kid you not. I slipped on my new shoes right on my backside with my dress over my head right in front of Steve.
Oh.
No kidding. And the whole class started to roar, of course, because it was funny. I wasn't laughing. To me, that was one of the most humiliating moments. It was embarrassing. I remember thoughts going through my head like, well, that's what you get for trying to be somebody you're not. And why did you ever think anybody'd think you were cool anyway? And, you know, all those things that kind of galvanize in your head at moments like that.
Mm-hmm.
I totally don't know what happened after that. I really don't. I don't remember sitting in the seat. I don't remember. I just kind of blacked out, I'm sure.
Oh.
That was the first incident that just kind of spontaneously came up in my mind when I asked myself, what's so scary to me about singing in front of people?
Mm-hmm.
So the energy techniques that I use are a composite of techniques that actually calm the amygdala's response. Now, the amygdala is an area in about the middle of your brain that is in charge of monitoring fear and safety, danger and safety. And especially danger or safety that has to do with our own emotional ego safety, our self-concept, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I started using these techniques to clear the emotional electrical charge on that memory of that fourth grade incident. It took me about 15 or 20 minutes, and I got it to the point where I couldn't feel anything about that anymore. I mean, I could remember it. I knew what happened. I can tell the story over and over again, but I don't have the same sharp, ew, you know, that feeling that happens. I didn't have those feelings attached to it. It was just like a story that happened. Now, as I did that, I totally realized that I had no idea whether this would translate into me being any more comfortable singing in front of people or not. I'd have to wait and see. But the truth was, the next time I had an opportunity to get up in front of people and sing, I was about half as nervous.
Oh.
It was amazing. I was about half as nervous. So I started to think, okay, what else happened that could have, you know, put me off my feet, if you will, about any kind of performing or singing? And I remembered things my dad said, or that time with the family, you know, around the piano, the time that I got into the glee club, but in junior high, I got into the glee club, but the choir director gave me a sad look and said, I'm sorry, you're a second soprano, not a first soprano.
Mm.
I didn't know at all. I didn't know nothing about music. So I didn't know it just meant that I had a lower range. I thought I wasn't very good.
Oh.
So I didn't sing in junior high. I backed off because I thought, oh, I must not be a very good singer. So I sat down with myself later in life and cleared up the emotional energy that was still attached to those kinds of incidents that were affecting who I thought I was in a performing situation. And every time I cleared up the energy, I was less and less nervous when the real situation came around. Not only that, but when you're tense, you don't sing very well. You really have to be relaxed in order to sing well. So it went hand in hand that the more relaxed I was, in other words, the less conflicted on the inside I was about even trying to sing for people, the better I sang. And the better I sang, then the easier it became. So the combination of clearing up those old internal memories that have to do with our self-concept, and then, of course, learning whatever the skill is or whatever the performance is, whether it's playing an instrument or singing or speaking or anything else, you know, there's a body of knowledge about how to do that. But it's very difficult to apply that body of knowledge when you're plagued by self-concern.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. I definitely find I was in choir myself. And if I was nervous, especially getting up in front of the room to perform, to try out for a song, of course I'd get nervous. And then I knew I could sing it, but not in that moment. My body was like, nope, we're going to constrict that throat and it's going to sound like a goose.
Okay, I hope you got over that.
I think so, yeah. Eventually.
That's good. Because singing is so wonderful. I just want anybody to be able to sing and offer that to other people if they can.
So through all of these realizations, how did they then become the book that you have today? What made you want to put them onto paper?
Well, you know, things have happened in my life so, like, seemingly randomly. And then when you look back on it, they're not random at all.
Mm-hmm.
I had a friend who was in a coaching program some years ago. She had a free ticket to, you know, one of those events that coaches put on. And when I went to it, one of the things they did was to put us through a process of, if you, you know, wanted to be a personal brand and get your word out there about something, what would it be about? And this was a number of years ago. And so just randomly, I just picked stage fright.
Hmm.
And I was picked to be in a coaching program that was a 6-month coaching program because the leaders of that program thought that that was a pretty cool topic. And nice. One of the assignments in this coaching program was to write a book. Well, I think what they meant was write a little kind of ebook or a little promotional piece, kind of a book, you know, like people write.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a deadline to get this done. And as I started to write it, I went, holy moly, this is really important. I mean, this really works. I've been doing this with people over and over and over and over again, and it really works. It's really important that I put it down so that people can use these techniques for themselves, because I can't coach everybody in the world. And it's very different approach than other people have to managing or overcoming or conquering stage fright. This is about actually dissolving the source of the stage fright so you don't have to manage it anymore.
Yeah.
It just isn't there anymore to manage.
Right.
So as I was writing it, thinking it was just going to be a little pamphlety book, it turned into a real book because I realized that the word needs to get out to people. One of the most gratifying things that happened to me just recently is that on my Facebook group page, someone who I believe was in India put a testimonial about the book up there that told the story of him just being in excruciating, nightmarish suffering over stage fright and fear of public speaking. And then he actually read the book, did the exercises, followed the videos that are part of the book, and he got over his stage fright and now is comfortable speaking. It just blew me away that someone could purchase my book, actually do the process, and as a result, have their lives changed that dramatically.
That's really wonderful.
It really, really is wonderful. So it was in that coaching program that I was given the assignment to write a little something that then turned into the book. And since then, I've realized how really important it is that to get it out there so that people can use it and they can really change the course of their lives in many cases.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That actually brings up a couple of things for me. One, just kind of curious, because you have the actual You have the credentials to be a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
You've gone into coaching, mm-hmm. and let me ask you. I mean, what do you see as the difference between therapy, coaching, and training?
That is such a good and sometimes controversial question among therapists, coaches, and trainers. Right? Yes, yeah. I have the credentials. I've been a licensed mental health counselor for, oh gosh, 30 years, and I still am licensed as a therapist. Some people say that the difference between therapy and coaching is that therapists go into the past and coaches don't.
Mm-hmm.
But that is not in practice what happens.
Mm-mm.
Therapists are not just mired in the past, and coaches are not limiting themselves only to talking about today and the future.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So that's really not, that's a blurred distinction. Therapists do and are licensed to address diagnosable conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And coaches are not.
Mm-hmm.
So if someone came to me and said, I have clinical depression, or they present to me their symptoms and that looks a lot like clinical depression. I can diagnose that. I can bill insurance for it. And I'm treating their depression, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Same with anxiety, same with panic, same with phobias, etc. If someone went to a coach and said the same thing, that coach can't say, I am treating your depression. That would be operating as a therapist without a license.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm. Right.
Now, I am not a life coach, although I could be. I'm not a life coach because I haven't been through any kind of coaching training in that regard. It wouldn't be difficult. What I am is a stage fright coach, is what I call myself, and I'm a public speaking coach.
Mm-hmm.
So those are very different goals and purposes. It's not therapy, although, mm-hmm. as I've talked with you about it, and it as always comes up in my working with someone to get over their stage fright, there are roots in the past, but it's not necessarily like, matter of fact, often isn't, as in my case, it isn't huge trauma. It isn't clinical depression. It isn't generalized anxiety disorder. There's nothing diagnosable about it. It's just fear of public speaking. I mean, you could call it a phobia, I suppose. But it isn't the same as someone coming and wanting to clear up their diagnosable mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's a difference there. Coaching to me is a person assisting someone else to get where they want to go. Now, you could say that about therapy too, because you want to help this person feel better emotionally and psychologically.
Mm-hmm.
In coaching, in stage fright coaching, there are very distinct and specific goals that I want to see happen, which is that with more and more clearing up of inner conflict around thinking of oneself as a performer or a singer or a speaker, that their experience of doing those things becomes more and more comfortable. And that produces more security, more confidence in their ability to do that specific thing. Like a basketball coach or any kind of coach. And I also, of course, include coaching in the more traditional sense, which is, if you stand this way, you might feel doing the kind of coaching people along with their skills as well. I think a trainer really is even further on the spectrum from a coach, where a trainer is actually teaching people skills.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Not really addressing any internal phenomenon, if you will, but really teaching skills. Like training somebody to knit or training somebody to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's a blend. With all of that long answer to that question, I think it really in practice is a blend.
Gotcha. Yeah, and I think that, for me, between Veronica and myself, I know I'm more on the training side, she's more on the coaching side. And one of the mm-hmm. things that I differentiate myself is that when I'm looking at coaching, I feel that when you're coaching someone, the answer lies within, whereas with mm-hmm. training, it's more of an external, it's like, this is the information you don't mm-hmm. have. And I kind of look mm-hmm. at therapy almost being the same way, is that it's more external. Coaching is helping someone come up with the answer internally.
I think. I am so happy you brought that up. Therapy is not, I would disagree with you, let's put it that way.
Okay.
Most therapists will facilitate their client in their process,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily tell them what to do or whatever. In addition to that, a therapist will also give information to a client that they may not have had before that might inform their own decision making or their own reframing or their own, take on a situation. But it is not the therapist's job to tell the client what to do or how to do it or how to feel about something.
Mm-hmm.
So in that sense, it's very much like a coaching process. To piggyback on that thought, especially energy psychology is geared toward helping that person make shifts inside that then they themselves they literally experience the situation differently. Their emotional take on a situation is different. Sometimes people think therapists are just talking all the time, you know, that's the only thing therapists do, that is to be a listening ear for someone. But with mind-body techniques, especially like the rapid relief process, which I'd like to talk about in a minute, which is a co-developed by myself and another therapist, Stephanie Eldringhoff, who both of us have been using energy psychology techniques for decades, have put together a process called the rapid relief process, which is a 5-exercise routine that addresses the emotional disturbance in any memory or prospect or relationship and takes the negative emotional charge off of those experiences so that the person really does perceive the situation differently without the therapist telling them how they should perceive it.
Gotcha. So if you were to say, if this was a Venn diagram, coaching would be on the left, training would be on the right, and therapy would kind of be in the middle then.
Well, that's really interesting because I would put therapy on one end and training on another end and coaching in the middle.
Okay. Okay.
But I suppose it depends on what the continuum is that you're thinking about.
Right.
I would say that therapy actually is probably more on the internal end, training more on the external end, and coaching some blend of the two, depending on the person and how they go about it and what they're coaching a person in.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. The other thing that I wanted to bring up was career pivoting. And, you know, I was listening to a recent interview with Glenn Beck and Lewis Howes. You know Lewis?
I don't.
Howes? Okay. He's one of the biggest podcasters that are out there right now, especially in the business and self-development world. And in fact, his podcast is called The School of Greatness.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the, you know, they were talking about pivot points in people's lives. And Lewis was talking about how he had his dreams of being an NFL player taken away from when he broke his wrist when he was in the Arena Football League. And, you know, he just couldn't make it into any practice squads for the NFL after that. And, you know, it was during that same time where he met his first business mentor, which is a local inventor in Columbus, where he started getting more interested in business. He also mentioned that when he was in his teens, like later teens, he knew he wanted to have this presence about him when he was at a Tony Robbins event. You know, he was there sitting watching Tony do his thing, and Tony came off the stage like he does, and he stopped right by Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
And while he wasn't necessarily speaking, because I guess he was like listening to someone else in the crowd speak, he was there and he was still giving off this vibe that Lewis felt, and he wanted to figure out how to have that presence himself.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the thing was, is that even after all the podcast interviews that Lewis has had over the years, I never knew these things about him, that he pivoted from, you know, going from a NFL one, you know, person that wants to be in a professional football player. I did know that, but I didn't know that he had become an inventor, had gone through business, had actually sold a couple million-dollar businesses, and then he went into podcasting. I had no idea. I thought it was like NFL player turns podcaster webinar specialist. I didn't know exactly that there's that middle ground. And he's pivoted a number of times, and just kind of like you. And the first time, you know, you were wanting to be a director, and then you became a therapist, which you still are licensed, but then you became an author, and then you're kind of in the coaching. And, you know, I feel that many people that are in the working world feel that, you know, they're stuck in a rut, just like, you know, Lewis found himself unceremoniously outside of the NFL, that they're no longer able to go after that thing that they've always wanted to do. What do you say to that, especially with when you made that jump from director to therapist?
I think that the pivots that I've made in my life, and it sounds like the pivots that Lewis made in his life, were all still consistent with being a forward-thinking, creative person who would carve things out for himself rather than simply succumb to whatever assumptions would limit him.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't stop, in other words.
Right. Right.
And not only that, but he also took what he accumulated along the way and used it for the next thing.
Mm.
And I bet if he talked about it, or if you and I were talking to him personally, there would be an underlying sort of magnetic pull toward what he is passionate about and what he cares about.
Right.
That probably right. is a thread that goes through each and every one of the things that he did along the way.
Right, right.
So the pivot is a pivot because the specific thing looks different, but it isn't a pivot in the sense of who he always was and who he continues to be.
Right.
And I feel that for myself as well.
Well, I know that for him specifically, that he likes helping people make those pivots. And I feel that you're very kind of in the same vein with, you know, helping people get over their phobias and
Absolutely. Especially,
the stage fright. So,
yeah. And not only get over their phobias and their stage fright, but reap the rewards of what that will bring them. What is so thrilling to me. Well, here's a story. I was working with a fellow. I'm in Seattle. He's in Florida. He finds out that I have a meetup group in Seattle where I teach these principles. And so he signed up to come to the meetup group. And I was chuckling because he's not going to come to my meetup group from Florida. So I contacted him and he decided to work with me individually. He was in a position where he had to do a video interview to get into a postgraduate business program at Stanford. He could not make himself talk to the computer screen. He was camera shy in that regard. And he had to be able to do this interview in order to get into this program.
Mm-hmm.
So I worked with him. I think we met for about 6 sessions. And I worked with him both clearing up whatever inside of him was putting him in conflict or making it feel like a threatening situation, like I've talked about before, but also applying some real world here and now tricks and skills for being able to do that interview. The interview came around. He nailed it. I mean, totally nailed it. He was so pleased with himself. But the icing on the cake, or maybe it's the cake itself, is that he got into the program. That guy got into that program at Stanford because I was able to help him do that interview where he couldn't do it before and would not have gotten into that program. So who knows? And it's a program about making real changes in the world and engineering and in the environment. So who knows what the ripple effect will be because he got into that program.
Right. It
thrills me when that happens.
So I think some of our listeners are going to be asking, what were the things that you told this gentleman in order to help him come out of his shell? Is there anything that you can, any tips that you can give to our listeners, something quick that they can do to start working through some of their stage fright issues?
Absolutely. First thing to do, I can't teach everybody the energy, rapid relief energy piece right here on this podcast, but the first thing to do is to get objective about the sensations involved. So many times when we're in a stage fright situation of any kind, we get so concerned about the sensations that we're having that then that becomes the problem, if you follow.
Yes.
So if I have a sore thumb, for instance, I'm not going to freak out about my sore thumb. It might hurt, but I view it objectively. It isn't me and it doesn't mean anything about me. First thing a person needs to do is go, oh, I get it. My heart's racing. Okay. My stomach's doing flip-flops. Okay, I'm knitting my brow because I'm worried. Okay. The more objective and observational we can get about those sensations, and the less we make it mean about whether we're going to screw up or what people think or, you know, then the more we can simply ride those sensations and go ahead and do what we're doing anyway. That would be number one. Another way to think about that is that the sensations are actually caused within us. There's nothing dangerous about the situation itself. The amygdala that I talked about before, that part of our brain that's looking out for threatening situations, has made an association with something that doesn't have to do with the present situation. It has to do with the amygdala picking up on some similarities with some previous situation that may have happened to us. And the amygdala is what's firing off all those biochemical signals that makes us feel what we call afraid. But really, it's an internal cascade of biological associations with something other than the present moment. Sometimes if we can simply view the situation that objectively, without making it mean anything about the situation at hand, it can help us to override those sensations and just go ahead and do what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, beyond that, we can also create safety in the moment for ourselves by managing the situation and managing ourselves to the best possible way that will reduce the amount of threat we're feeling and increase the amount of safety. One of the things people say all the time is practice, 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 right? Well, yes, practice, practice, practice. What practice does, though, is make the situation more reliable and more familiar. And the more reliable and familiar it is, the more the amygdala will calm down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's practice, practice, practice in a way, but it's very specifically for the purpose of creating safety in the situation.
Yeah.
Another story about safety. I had a singer friend, a wonderful singer, and whenever she would perform singing, which she never got nervous about, she was either sitting on a stool or she was leaning against the piano. I saw her teaching a seminar, doing a speaking situation, and she started getting really nervous. She started getting tense, her eyes started to get big, her voice started to shake, and she did something that really struck me. She didn't even realize she'd done it. I told her about it later. She reached over and she grabbed a stool and pulled it out into the middle of the room, and, you know, the stage, if you will. It wasn't really a stage, but in front of the crowd, and sat on a stool, and instantly her nervousness went away. Why? Because she arranged the situation to be associated in her mind with something that she was very familiar with and very comfortable with. There's all kinds of things that we can do to create safety for ourselves.
Yeah, that's really very good advice. It reminds me a little bit of how as adults we learn to self-parent a little bit, where you say, okay, you're scared, but it's the body that's reacting. So then to somehow mentally remove yourself from that situation and say, okay, this is happening, but everything's okay. So let's work to calm down or even take it further by making it a safe place, whatever that might mean for the individual. It's really wonderful advice.
Let me give you one more concrete tip than that. I mean, those are all kind of mental things that you can do or situational things you can do. But here's a physical thing that you can do that you may remember in school that the parasympathetic nervous system is the part of our autonomic nervous system that revs us up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, excuse me, I have it backwards. The sympathetic nervous system revs us up and the parasympathetic nervous system calms us down. The calming phenomenon happens because the vagus nerve gets activated, which puts the brake on our revving up. So the vagus nerve is the brake, and the sympathetic nervous system is the gas pedal. So to stimulate the vagus nerve is to calm down that sympathetic nervous system that just wants to go out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Here's one tip. If you take your wrists and match the inside of your wrists together, and then just let your hands relax on your forearms, put your forearms on your lower belly. If you're standing up, you're going to be able to maybe reach your midriff. And if you're sitting down, put your wrists right on top of your lower belly.
Mm-hmm.
And then breathe right into your wrist, like you're blowing up a balloon. Sometimes that works best if you breathe in through your nose. And sometimes it works best if you breathe in like you're breathing in through a straw, like, right? But whatever works best for you to get that breathing right down low into your belly and match your wrists at the same time. There are acupuncture pulse points in both of your wrists. When you're making that connection with your inner wrists, you're creating a circuit with your acupuncture meridian system that will help the flow of that. And you're also forcing your breath down into your diaphragm, and that kind of breathing will activate the vagus nerve, and you'll likely start to observe your heart rate starting to slow down.
Hmm.
Very interesting. That happened to me not too long ago when I was giving a speech, and I just noticed that my heart rate started to rise. So I stood off stage and leaned up against the wall and put my wrist together and breathed into my belly, and I completely forgot about my heart rate. It calmed down. I went out. I did the speech. That was that.
Hmm. It's wonderful.
That's something that people might try.
I feel calmer already.
Good.
So what's on the horizon for you this year?
Oh, Stephanie Eldinghoff, as I mentioned, is my best friend and co-developer of the rapid relief process, which is the energy psychology part of the stage fright cure. And we just decided we're going to start an online school.
Wow.
We are going to be putting up classes in the rapid relief method. We're going to be putting up classes in rapid relief for stage fright. She loves using energy psychology and the rapid relief process within relationships. We're going to be doing classes on difficult work situations to help people to use the same principles of calming down the reactive system in order to manage all kinds of things better.
Fabulous.
We're thrilled with that.
I'm sure.
Good deal. Good deal. So the next segment that we have is the rapid fire question segment. And I've kind of, this has been inspired by Lewis's show as well as some others.
Okay. If I don't have an answer, I'll just say, I don't have an answer for that. Give me a different question.
There you go. These are pretty easy, actually, so I don't think you're going to struggle too much. But the first one is, what are three of your top favorite books that you recommend or you gift to others?
I love classic books. Mm. For instance, How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Oh, yes.
By Dale Carnegie. Yeah. Can't beat it. Now, the thing about that book is you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt because it is a really old book. I think it was written in the 30s. Mm-hmm. So some of the references are kind of old-fashioned, but the principle of it and the spirit of it is so valuable in terms of how we relate to each other. Mm-hmm. And now more than ever, we need people who are modeling and teaching us how to treat each other with respect and with empathy and with positive regard. And that's the basis of that book.
Yeah.
So I love that one.
One of my top ones, too.
Another one that actually is more recent is called Progress.
Mm.
And I don't have the author of that right here because I don't have the book with me. It's a wonderful book about what life is like now versus what has been along many dimensions through the centuries. In other words, simple things like sanitation and food and the environment and big chunks of what the human experience is made of. And he describes in great detail, for instance, how sanitation has improved from before we ever had any facilities and how drinking water is so much cleaner and what technology has done for us. In a way that puts it in a in a broad perspective. And he's not ignoring the fact that there are many places in the world that are not up to the comfort level that we're so used to. But it's very valuable and very affirming to know and to really understand deeply that we live in a time that is so different than it would have been for us as human beings, even 100 or 200 or 300 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Is that book, The 10 Reasons to Look Forward to the Future?
He says so, and I think so too. As long as we can recognize the things that are urgent, right? And take care of those things before we do ourselves in.
Gotcha.
But it really is a testament to the human spirit, for sure.
Gotcha. If it's the one that I'm thinking about, it's by Johan Norberg. It has a smiley face on the front.
It has a smiley face on the front, and it's yellow.
Okay. Gotcha. Yes. Okay. Yes. Gotcha.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And a third one?
And a third one. You know, I always pick up a little book called How to Use the Science of Mind by Ernest Holmes. It's about reminding ourselves over and over and over again that our inner perspective is what tends to show up on the outside in our worlds.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
We as creative human beings have the ability to decide how we guide ourselves through our lives by what we focus on and what we give attention to.
Yeah.
Mm. What is a scientific fact that you know is true but still blows you away that it's real?
Oh, actually, that one's easy. I say scientific fact because there is more and more and more and more research that the phenomenon of energy psychology, which is the basis of the rapid relief process, produces a calming effect in the amygdala that we can measure on fMRIs. And that changes our perception of a situation for the better repeatedly and repeatedly and repeatedly. We call up the energy, and I've got air quotes going, we call up the energy of an experience that is a disturbing or distressing experience, and we dismantle the distress or the disturbance in that memory, and we strengthen the energy system in the face of that memory, and people's interpretation of that memory and what it means to them as individuals gets reconsolidated into a new version of that memory. Not that the facts are different, but that the meaning of it is different.
Mm.
So that if, for instance, let's take any incident in my life or your life or anyone's life where we decided it wasn't safe, just because we're talking about stage fright, it wasn't safe to get up in front of people and say what you have to say. And that came from some learning somewhere in our past inner lives. And the meaning that we put on that event or those conditions. It happens over and over and over again that energy psychology techniques can help us reconsolidate those conditions and those memories so that they are no longer impeding us in the present moment.
Hmm. Yeah. And another one of my co-hosts, Clay Green, man, he, you know, his background is in nuclear engineering,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's a huge fan of meditation.
Yes.
And he's constantly, he's like, when he's doing any Facebook lives, he's constantly letting people know. It's like, it's been proven, like, in scientific, you know, journals and things like this, that a lot of the stuff that has already been determined way back with meditation is something that's legitimately a plausibility, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
And, you know, in these studies, and it, you know, it's all about that energy that you're talking about. So,
exactly.
Yeah, it's cool. It's cool. And
what's so exciting to me that it is becoming science. It is becoming supported by our observations with the measurements that we have.
Right.
it is less and less something that people like, oh, it's mind over matter, or it's just, you know, placebo or something. No, it's replicable and measurable. And that's what's so exciting.
We had a gal, Rena May, was on here not too long ago, and she, which was session 75, and Rena was talking about how that she's a integrative healing person, right? Mm-hmm. And so she uses practitioner, I guess you could say. So she's an integrative healing practitioner, and she was talking about all these different things that you're kind of talking about here, and you know, she's like, you know, energy and like, well, all the things that she's studying. And she's been able to help so many different people in non-Western ways, mm-hmm. that she's now going to become an MD so that she can get people off of the Western medication so that the work that she's doing and this alternative work, you know, will actually be able to help the person.
Absolutely.
With the underlying issues, as opposed to, you know, just covering it up with the, you know, drugs and whatever.
Right.
So
right. And as an MD, she has the credibility to do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, coming at it from the traditional side and incorporating more and more into the traditional side, the non-traditional, I think is the way it's all gonna move.
That's awesome. Cool. What's something that isn't as bad as you thought it would be?
Parenting. Parenting.
That's good news for me.
I have two wonderful, grown-up, beautiful, intelligent daughters who are very different from each other. And of course, as the process was going along, there are difficult times. And times when you are pretty sure you're not doing the right thing, and you're just like closing your eyes and hoping that you're going to get through it to adulthood. And then when they grow up and they are people of their own in their own right with excellent values and a love for other people and a love of learning and contributing, it just makes your heart swell. So my message for young parents out there is hang in there. When they get to be 25 and 30, they're going to tell you how much they love you and how much they appreciate what you've done for them, even if you weren't perfect.
Wow. That's cool. That's cool. Here's another one. What basic life skill are you constantly amazed people lack?
Kindness.
Kindness
in the face of effrontery. In other words,
okay,
people on the highway, they cut you off or something, right? First thing that seems to come up in people's minds is not kindness.
No. And not only that, but it's usually your fault that they cut you off.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, they're probably, you know, mumbling under their breath about whatever you did that caused them to justify themselves in cutting you off.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So traffic is a perfect example of that, but it happens everywhere. Most everyone is doing the best they can in any given moment. And yet we sometimes forget that, and we imagine people are badly intentioned or something. And I don't think people are in the majority of times, I don't think people are badly intentioned. And if we can remember to offer kindness instead of combativeness, it can go a long way.
What's
as a matter of fact,
mean,
I remember one time, this guy, he didn't cut me off, but he thought I did something wrong, I guess, because he gave me the digit. And I blew him a kiss. And he smiled and went on, and he really did. He smiled and went on his way.
That's cool. Good deal. Good job. Last one. What does it mean to live a life of abundance?
To be heartfelt in your gratitude for what you have, even though it may not be what you would think of as much as someone else? We all have an infinite variety of circumstances that we're living with. But I think the abundance comes in recognizing what we have rather than what we don't have. Mm-hmm. That the experience of abundance isn't the quantity of the stuff you have. It's how you regard your life and how it feels on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Great. Love that. Awesome. So, thank you so much for coming on today. If people want to get additional help from you, where are the best places for people to get a hold of you?
Number one, go to my website, which is stagefright.com. You can read about me there. You can order the book there. You can book a consultation with me, a 30-minute free consultation with me to tell me about your specific situation and how I can help you. You can also book an hour-long, either online or in-person in Seattle, appointment with me from the website. And you can find the book on Amazon. The easiest way to find it is to search Amazon Stage Fright Cure. Those words awesome. Will bring me right up. If you just put in Stage Fright, you'll get Stage Fright, the computer virus, and Stage Fright, the stage play, and Stage Fright, the band. But if you search Amazon Stage Fright Cure, and the book will come up. And by the way, the book also comes with videos that show you these energy psychology techniques, the rapid relief process that I've been talking about all along.
Well, Marty, thank you so much for being here today.
It's been a pleasure. Yeah. I thank you so much for being on the show, and it's been wonderful to meet you.
Yeah, definitely appreciate you being here today.
Can't wait to see what happens with the school.
Thank you. It was fun to talk to you.
Bye. All right, folks, there you have it. Really hope you enjoyed that conversation with Marty McEwen and a different perspective of what stage fright is and what you can do about it. Like Rena May's interview, it was a big eye-opener as far as, you know, a problem that many people have. And be sure to check out Marty via her site at stagefright.com. Her other contact information is in the show notes at newinceptions.com/88. And in the show note extras this week, I have a couple of videos of Marty where she talks a bit further about the Stage Fright Cure book and emotional first aid. I also have two other videos, which are TEDx presentations about speaking. The first one, Professor Dave Gwynn, discusses where it comes from a little bit further. And I follow that one up with Richard Green talking about the 7 secrets of the greatest speakers in history. Both have really great points that they make, and I thought it would really add to this conversation. And I also have to say that Dave is a pretty entertaining guy. So that about wraps it up for today's session. Thanks again for joining us for the conversation today. As you know, we love hearing from you guys, especially the iTunes reviews. And then this week, Cole Sports says that the host gives the listener value and the guests supplement the host's vision of the show. Entrepreneurs need inspiration, and in this show provides such a needed help in trying times like these. Thank you so much, Cole, for your kind words. Really appreciate the review. And yes, indeed, entrepreneurs definitely do need inspiration because for many of us, it's something that, you know, just doesn't come naturally. And, you know, it's so easy to go back to, you know, living a mediocre life. So definitely, definitely good to hear that we're on the right track there. Remember, you too can leave feedback on the show by leaving a review on iTunes. If you're listening to us through the podcast app on your iPhone, all you have to do is hit the reviews tab and add your own. We'd really appreciate it. And Android users, feel free to leave us feedback on SoundCloud. If you have any feedback or questions regarding the show or the guest, you can drop us an email via heyguys@newinceptions.com. And if you want to connect with Marty directly or any of our past guests, other listeners, or members of the team, you can do so by going to the AOL networking group on Facebook. Find it by going to newinceptions.com/AOL networking. In next week's episode, I talk with Easton Allred, who's the host of the Fueled for Teens podcast. Easton is a multi-talented young man who, like several of our past young guests, has a homeschool background, which has allowed him to get ahead on his entrepreneurial game. On top of that, he has a passion for sports and really loves helping other teens escape their comfort zones. We talk about all these aspects of his life and how he's been able to succeed at such a young age with all these activities that he has going on. Stay tuned for that one come next week, and be sure to like the new Inceptions page on Facebook to get informed when it's released. So that's it for Session 88. Thanks again for joining Veronica, Marty, and myself. And until next time, gang, dig in, have fun, and take care of whatever you're creating. We'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.